shareholder activist that he is, and you've been extremely active as a shareholder recently. I'll get to that in a moment. Hello, by the way.
Hello.
Where were you at 11 o'clock today?
I was at the Computershare AGM where proceedings were halted by the Rich Lister Executive Chairman Chris Morris.
For one minute,
and we observed our silence with about 100 people in the room. So first time I've seen an AGM actually interrupted.
Yes.
So it was good.
Yeah, it's very good. Did everybody manage to shut up for a minute?
They did. Although we sort of heard over the loudspeaker system the rest of the staff in the Computershare building being told to be quiet a half a minute after we started.
Right.
So, but it wasn't too loud, like it wasn't a booming loudspeaker. So they did the right thing, it was good.
I was asking earlier why we don't have 2 minutes like they do in the UK and a lot of other countries, that we only have a minute. I think Jack might be able to tell us. Hello, Jack.
I can tell you why you had 2 minutes.
Oh, okay, fine.
When the gun stopped, there was silence for 2 minutes in the trenches.
Right.
In the 700 miles, I don't remember.
That was just natural because people were just relieved
shocked.
And shocked, yes.
Utterly shocked. And I think it was probably reduced to a minute, you know, to sort of keep up with the limited concentration these days.
Okay, you're probably right, Jack.
Yeah.
Thanks for your call, mate.
Bye-bye.
Text message. I was in a classroom full of 15-year-olds. Principal made a speech. You could hear a pin drop during the minute of silence. That's good. Another, I was in a large shopping centre at a well-known department store. An announcement came over at 11 to observe silence. However, they continued to play the store music. Dear. I visited a nursing home and watched with tears as a 95-year-old resident insisted on standing for the 2 minutes. I almost cried as the maintenance man and a nurse stood either side of her and supported her while she stood with such dignity and respect. I'm getting... Oh, Tracy, that's a lovely story. Thank you very much. So that's just some of the things that were going on around the country today, around the state, in response to Remembrance Day on the 11th of the 11th. Not such a great day in the markets, really. I don't think it'll be remembered for too much, except bad stuff.
Well, I think the shareholders in Asciano might remember November 11.
Yes.
Big infrastructure company.
What do they own? They own
Pacific National.
Right.
So they bought the rail business off the state and federal governments 6 or 7 years ago, and they own Patrick Stevedores. So
whole
wharf battles, they took over Chris Corrigan's company in a very hostile battle about 2 or 3 years ago, and then that was part of Toll Holdings. Then Graham Samuel, the regulator, said, you're too big, you've got to split up. So they split it up, the infrastructure business, into Asciano, named after the CEO's favourite Italian village. And the CEO is Mark Rosethorne, who's a Rich Lister, who's the brother of Pete Rosethorne, the comedian.
Is that right? So is he wishing that he was in that village now?
I think he probably is, because the share price in the 41 minutes that it was allowed to trade for this morning fell 60%. So it fell $1.03 to 69 cents. Now, this was an $11 stock when they demerged from Toll in 2007. They have $5 billion of debt, almost $5 billion. And clearly the market's now taking the view that they're probably they're in trouble. They've got too much debt and they can't sell off their assets because everyone else is trying to sell off their infrastructure assets.
So they obviously borrowed heaps of money in order to make these acquisitions over the last several years.
Well, what happened was when they split off Toll, they said, well, you've got stable infrastructure assets that can support a lot of debt. So they stuck most of the debt, 80% of the debt, they stuck into Asciano. Now, I mean, I was at the Asciano AGM a couple of weeks ago, and Mark Rosethorne, I mean, they are also the biggest Australian car storage company. So they take them in through the docks, and then they store them. And he said then that our storage facilities are at 120%. In other words, the cars are all pouring in,
yes,
but no one's buying them.
No one's buying them, of course.
So, you know, yes, they're a reliable infrastructure company, but if there's a crisis in the car industry, they're not going to be able to clip the ticket on every car that's imported because imports are going to fall by 30 or 40%.
Yep.
So, and they can't have any more cars in their storage facilities than 120%, which was 2 weeks ago. No one's buying cars. So the whole spiral effect of the global car industry being in crisis, and there's a lot of talk that General Motors is going to go under in the next week in the US, and that, you know, the US government will have to bail them out. This is an example of the cascading that you see, the collateral damage. And Asciano, I mean, you know, I hate to say it's over, but the stock that's already fallen 80% to suddenly fall 60% in one day and be suspended.
What is it? It's 69 cents now.
Yeah, so it's worth $400 million and it's supporting assets they claim is worth 6 or 7 billion or thereabouts. So, you know, you might, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's very...
What happens to something like... Sorry to jump in. What happens to Pacific National or Patrick Stewart or something? How do they maintain business?
Well, they are great assets. So unlike ABC Learning, where 40% of their centres are losing money, where they're not great assets and it's been incompetently run, Asiana have great assets and they are actually run very well. They are just victims of of an inappropriate capital structure, loaded up with too much debt in an environment where asset values around the world have fallen by 40 to 50%.
So the chances are that these will be snapped up by somebody else.
Well, this is the thing about Asiana, is they knocked back a takeover bid from the world's biggest private equity firm, TPG, and another partner they had at $4.40 a share. So they were living the old paradigm. They were living the old world. Hang on, our infrastructure assets are great. How dare you only offer us $4.40? This is outrageous. Stocks at 69 cents. The banks are all circling, and they're now looking at 440 and saying that'd be nice. And the private equity firm sitting there saying, "Well, why don't we just wait to talk to the banks if that's where it's going?"
Do I reckon that sale of those tablets that you take for a rather upset stomach? I reckon they're going through the roof. That'd be some sort of shareholding to get into.
Well, I think so. I'm in the market today.
It was shocking. Actually, get to that in just a moment. We're still assuming that City Power has restored power to the Albert Park area. That was meant to be up and running by 5:30. We'll check in on that in just a moment. 28 to 6, more from Stephen Mayne in a moment. And also off to the UK. What's Remembrance Day like for them? But firstly, the news headlines. Colin Denneman, good afternoon.
Yes, thank you, Lindy. The receiver of ABC Learning is calling for bids to buy or take over the company's childcare centres. The federal government's $22 million assistance package will keep the centres operating at least until the end of the year. The Education Minister, Julia Gillard, says a sale process hasn't been put in place, but the receiver is welcoming expressions of interest. The administrators of Ballarat company John Valves have told its 130 workers there's some hope their jobs can be saved. John Valves laid off its workers more than a month ago to contend with a multi-million dollar debt. Earlier today, administrators told the AMWU all offers had been rejected and the company would be liquidated. Now, the administrator has addressed the employees and told them there is some hope. Thousands of people, including the Premier, veterans and schoolchildren, have attended a Remembrance Day service at the Shrine. The service was one of many held around the country to mark the 90th anniversary of the end of the First World War. Police are searching for three men involved in a South Yarra shooting after a drug deal went wrong this morning. A 35-year-old Keilor East man was shot in the head with a shotgun in Alexandra Avenue and staggered to a block of flats with a T-shirt wrapped around his head. He's in a stable condition in hospital. Police say he was shot after the drug deal turned sour and he's lucky to be alive. Sunny tomorrow with north to northwesterly winds, a low overnight of 15 and a top tomorrow of 32. Next news at 6.
774 ABC. Traffic for Melbourne.
Hello, I'm Mary-Jane Fenwick. Frank has just texted in to say that a cement truck has rolled over at the corner of Bell Street and Nicholson Streets in Coburg. It's on the side of the road now, but there will be delays in the area. And earlier, two trucks collided on the Western Ring Road westbound at the exit to the Tullamarine Freeway. The westbound through lanes to Altona are open. However, it has caused a lot of delays. You'll find it quite slow. It will take you 34 minutes to Altona from the Greensboro Highway. There are also lights on flash on Maroondah Highway at the East Link interchange, and there's also a power failure in Albert Park. It's affecting the lights at two intersections, one at Albert and Clarendon Streets and the other at Beaconsfield Parade and Kerford Road. Now looking at the freeways for you, the Eastern is slow at Chandler Highway. It will take you 16 minutes from Hoddle Street to Springvale Road. East Link is 25 minutes to the Frankston Freeway. If you're using the Ring Road heading to Greensboro, traffic does slow at the Western Highway to the Calder, taking you 37 minutes from the Westgate Freeway. It's not a bad run out on the Monash. From Kingsway this afternoon, it will take you 31 minutes to Jackson's Road. The Westgate Freeway is light, 23 minutes to Duncan's Road. And if you need to get to the airport, it will take you 17 minutes on the Tullamarine. Now looking at the trains, the 6 o'clock Frankston train from Flinders Street has been cancelled. If you have any traffic updates for me, you can call on 9626 1767 or text to 19 774 774. It's 25 minutes to 6.
Lindy Burns.
It's a bit of a difficult afternoon on the roads, but not so in here. Stephen Mayne is with me, shareholder activist that he is. You'll hear in just a moment what happened at the Channel 7 AGM and the fact that Stephen, in his usual way, is obviously annoying those up on the stage. So much so, Stephen, that I think security had to be called. So we'll talk about that in a moment, although the whole idea of having you forcibly removed from a room is tempting to talk about now. But there are much more important matters, including, of course, Remembrance Day. I was asking earlier what you've been doing today at 11 o'clock. A text that says, my company had time for a fire drill, Lindy, but not time to observe a minute's silence. Perhaps it needs legislation. What do you think of that, Stephen? Legislation for the minute's silence.
Goodness me. You can legislate everything under the sun, but yeah. I think that would be a bridge too far.
I think it would be too. In the UK, of course, Remembrance Sunday, the Sunday just gone, is the major ceremony for them at the Cenotaph. It ensures that nobody is forgotten. There's a wreath laid by the Queen and other tributes placed on the Cenotaph in Whitehall, dedicated to all who've suffered or died in a war. The service there is actually organised by the Royal British Legion, and then across today, across the United Kingdom, the country will fall silent for 2 minutes at 11 o'clock. Stuart Gendall is the head of corporate communications, and we've woken him up. Hello, Stuart.
Hello, yes, I am awake.
Good man. Tell us exactly what goes on Remembrance Sunday for you.
Well, Remembrance Sunday, we're different. We have both the Remembrance Sunday and the 11th of November, which you celebrate. Remembrance Sunday is an event at the Cenotaph in Whitehall, and the Queen, and indeed all the heads of the Commonwealth, lay a wreath there, and there's a march past of our veterans organisations and servicemen. And we mark the 2 minute silence there on that day. So that's a major national event that happens on the Sunday nearest the 11th. And of course today we will mark the official Armistice Day, as we call it, when marks the 11 o'clock when the guns fell silent from the First World War, and we'll have another 2 minute silence.
So it is 2 minutes for you. We were talking about this earlier this afternoon, that for here it's, we've just gone back to the minute, and neither Stephen nor I can work out if it's because we can't shut up for anything longer than that, or if there's been some reason, other reason for it.
Well, I think the 2 minute silence originated here with the King George. And you know what us Brits are like. You know, we like to have an extra minute. But I think it sort of perhaps emphasises in people's mind that it makes people sort of think about that sacrifice and loss. And it is quite a poignant moment.
Stephen, you've got an involvement in all of this too, haven't you?
Stuart, I was going to tell you, my grandfather, Philip Mayne, was the last surviving officer from the British Army in World War One. He died last year at 107.
Wow.
And the British Legion brought a wreath to his funeral, which was very nice. And I think there was 9 privates still surviving after my grandfather. Are there many left today from the Great War?
Well, of course you've just lost a Melbourne resident, haven't you, Sidney Lucas, who died last week, which is a great shame. He was one of your last World War One veterans. We've got 3 here. We're very fortunate to have a representative from each of the forces. The oldest of which is Henry Allingham.
Oh, yes.
And a guy called, he's about 110, 111. And they will actually be at the Cenotaph today, and they'll be laying a wreath in remembrance of their colleagues and, of course, everybody that's died in the war since. And the biggest shame, I guess, is that, you know, that First World War was supposed to be the war that ended all wars. And people are still dying in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, every time I hear that statement, Stuart, I just shake my head because it's so patently wrong. What about engaging with new generations? The RSL, which is kind of the equivalent of you here in Australia, are really conscious of that. In fact, they put an announcement out earlier today together with the Victorian League, the Australian League and the Victorian League, are saying, we need to recruit some young people to sell poppies on Remembrance Day because the volunteer numbers are dropping, because usually it's volunteers and those who have been part of the previous wars who are part of this. Is that very much an issue for the Legion as well, to engage with the new generation?
Yes, that's so familiar. We it's very important for us to pass on the message of remembrance to a new generation, and we also need people to help us with our poppy appeal, which raises upwards of £30 million for our welfare work. And you know, what we have, we get involved in new media, we have things online, we use the mobile phones, we do everything that we can to engage the new generation and to get our message across, and perhaps also to show that we're not a bunch of old fuddy-duddies. Yes. There's a real need there, and you know, you can help with that.
And on that point, is this a ceremony today and indeed on Sunday that a lot of young people end up going to?
Oh, yes. I mean, I was at the Whitehall ceremony this Sunday, and there's a lot of young people there. They're both taking part. They'll march past with the medals of their grandfathers or fathers even, in token of respect. And also there's a huge number of young faces there in Whitehall watching it. So that's really brilliant and encouraging.
Stuart, enjoy the rest of your day. Enjoy is sort of a strange word in so many ways because there's so much sadness involved as well, but there's also a celebration that we do have the free nations that you and I both live in as a result of those efforts.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. Thank you, mate. You take care of yourself.
Thank you.
Stuart Gendall, who's the head of corporate communications with the Royal British Legion, and he mentioned, was it Henry or Harry?
Henry Allingham, yeah. I put some nice photos of my grandfather and Henry had a meeting a couple of years ago.
Did they know each other in the war?
No. Right. My grandfather had a very fleeting, he was in for 3 months or thereabouts, right. So he didn't set foot in France. So right. It was just a quirk of history that he was the last officer. But he met up with Henry Allingham, and I think the Times did a story, and we've got some nice photos of them meeting up. And it's great that Henry Allingham is still going at 110.
Isn't that remarkable? Amazing. It is remarkable. It's 110. Yes, I don't know if I'd really want to be alive at that age, considering what I'd probably be like. 17 to 6, Lindy Burns and Stephen Mayne, and Hendo resplendent in his poppy.
Thank you, Lindy. How are you?
Very well, thank you. It's lovely. He looks very nice, doesn't he?
Well, he always does.
He does. Dapper. Oh. It's important.
Break you too?
No, it's all right. Well, Stephen usually wears his suit. But he's not doing it now. I guess this is a major thrust this evening would be Remembrance Day.
Well, it would be, yes. Given that Kevin Rudd chose Remembrance Day to declare war on unemployment, it sort of helps.
Yes.
Because that's the thrust of our lead story tonight. It's the more bad, you know, sort of financial news, business conference.
Yeah, Stephen, I'm not letting him speak yet about it because it's so horrible.
Share market sort of doing its usual roller coaster thing. Kevin Rudd and Malcolm Turnbull arguing about it all.
They're also arguing as well about the conversation.
He hasn't really answered the question, has he?
Yes, about the conversation between George Bush and Kevin Rudd.
Yeah, it wasn't censored only because he has the numbers, I think.
That's
yeah.
right, yes.
It's very interesting because Chris Mitchell, the editor of The Australian, was having dinner at Kirribilli that night, and Kevin Rudd is the godfather of Chris Mitchell's son.
Right.
From a couple of years back. They knew each other for years when Kevin Rudd was Mr. Big in Queensland and Chris Mitchell was running the Courier Mail for Rupert Murdoch. So it's sort of the elephant in the room that none of them can ever bring to talk about in the Parliament is, well, what's the role of the editor of the paper which produced this
story?
Did the editor of the paper go out on a limb without the Prime Minister knowing it? But they're godparents. Mm.
Yes. You know, they've
got this godparent relationship. So it's very difficult for Kevin Rudd to come out and say what actually happened because of these sort of relationships. And no one's really even reporting this properly in the media.
No.
There are all these, obviously The Australian's not reporting it, and it's a tricky one.
Mm. So, yes, there's certainly that. The intriguing pictures of the day have to be Barack Obama and George Bush together.
Yes, in the White House.
Yeah. I mean, you'd have to think there would have been uncomfortable moments.
Wouldn't it have been?
You spent millions bagging Bush over the past 2 years, and now they've got to sort of cuddle up and present picture opportunities together. But, you know, I suppose, look, that's maybe the glory of democracy, isn't it? But certainly that's the intriguing one to look at.
We were trying to work out earlier today in the first hour, Adam Rosenbarks and I, what George Bush would have said if he opened the door. You know, I've been expecting you. No, thank you, not today.
Probably been expecting him for months. So
I'm sure he has.
The polls are to be believed, or were to have been believed. Look, there's a bit of a near miss for, I mean, John Valves in the Ballarat manufacturer might be, in fact, dead, but we don't know that yet. And in fact, it was almost declared dead today, and it was going to be liquidated, but all of a sudden at the last moment, the receiver said, wait, we've had a couple of last-minute bids and we'll put off a decision till Friday.
Some good news.
So we'll wait and see on that one. There was another near miss in South Yarra. It's an extraordinary story. The shooting down by the river. A bloke's been shot at point-blank range with a shotgun and lived
and
to tell the tale, in the head, and been lived to tell the tale. So, quite extraordinary.
I think it's a case of you don't try that at home, though.
I don't think it's necessarily going to work out that way
every single time.
Absolutely. And look, it's sounding like a pretty grubby circumstance too, but more of that in the bulletin tonight. We can all gloat at Sydney, which now has Australia's first congestion tax.
Does it?
I haven't heard that. Well, as Stephen will tell you, the New South Wales budget is shot to ribbons, and they've got to raise money somehow, so they're trying to do it in a, you know, socially responsible way. I don't know, but motorists are howling. And
how much is it, do you know?
The tunnel and the bridge go up from $3 to $4 in peak hours.
Right. So that's just an increase in tolls, though.
They're saying we're charging you more because we don't want you to go in there at that time of day.
But
we want you to go by public transport. Right. But get this, they're also scrapping plans for two new rail lines too. So you're damned if you do and damned if you don't, really.
So this before it's going very, very well up there.
Yeah. And look, we'll have all the emotion.
Of course you will. You've covered everything.
Of Remembrance Day, and
we've got
some great pictures and great stories there.
Good man.
Show you.
Ian Henderson, 7 o'clock tonight on ABC One. The weather mostly clear tonight, getting down to 15. Tomorrow, a top of 32, and it'll be sunny with north-northeasterlies up to 30 k's an hour. And then on Thursday, a late change in the day after we've reached 31. And then, of course, for Friday, Saturday and Sunday, 22, 20, 19. It's horrible, isn't it? Where's all that nice weather? More from Stephen in a moment.
Take a listen to some of 774's presenters streaming live on the web.
Red Simons.
Can I ask a very personal question?
How old?
No.
Oh. Ellie
Moore. They are regulating people who earn 7, 8, 9 million.
Richard Stubbs.
What about just National Sickie Day? Take a sickie.
Lindy Burns.
And you listen to this program on a regular basis? Somewhat regular.
Hit our website, abc.net.au/Melbourne, and hear your favourite presenters streaming live.
Lindy Burns on 774 ABC Melbourne.
Stephen Mayne also with me in a few minutes' time. The Quarterbeans will be along there filling in for Derek after 7 o'clock this evening. Just finishing up with the conversation we started with Hendo about New South Wales. They're put in a mini budget. Is this the second mini budget? I thought they already had a mini budget just some months ago.
Well, this is actually the most mega budget ever been delivered. If you look at the things they've done, it's the biggest mega budget of all time. I mean, it's a $500 million a year slug on the coal industry. They've jacked up the royalties, the land tax on homes worth more than $2 million. They've whacked that up. There's the congestion tax. There's abandoning all the infrastructure, and they're claiming they're going to save $900 million a year as well through slashing and burning. I think the thing they've probably avoided doing is the fact that they've got 460,000 public sector workers, and they really do need a dose of the Jeff Kennett's up there. That's the work practices, particularly in the whole public transport. They've had like 7 CEOs of the New South Wales rail system because the union runs the show. So, but because it's a Labor government, they can't actually bring themselves
to really
go for it on that front. So they've had to just do the old tax and slash infrastructure spending. So stop spending on capital and slug the community. And the problem with that is that New South Wales is already the highest taxing state. It's already got the slowest growth and the highest unemployment rate in the country. And so the damage that the tax slugs do to the economy is pretty substantial. But when you've got a $38 billion debt and you're projecting to borrow at $6 billion a year for the next few years, clearly you've got to do something. And the other thing they're doing is they're going to try and flog $10 billion worth of assets.
So like what? What have they got left?
Well, they're selling off all their energy retailers, so which obviously Kennett did back in the mid-90s, but not the generators, which was what the unions resisted. They're selling off their lotteries business. I mean, our lotteries are already privatised. They're selling off their forests. They reckon they can get a couple of billion for their forests. I think Kennett got $600 million from the Harvard Endowment, bought the Victorian forests off the Kennett government. So, yeah, they're going to try and flog $10 billion, but I think at the end of the day, their revenues are plunging because they're so reliant on property turnover.
Yes. But when you look at how much money they would have been reaping in over the last 10
years. Well, the silliest thing they did was they rode the revenue boom from the property bubble and left themselves with no margin for error. So they just spent a lot. They just did, you know, incredibly generous pay deals.
I was going to say, but you ask anybody who lives there, what are they spending on?
Well, it's just, it's the most, you know, all the public servants, the most highest paid. The rest of the states have always got to follow on because, the coppers get 30% over 4 years.
And the teachers are the most highly paid.
Yeah, I mean, at one level, it should happen because it's also the most expensive city. But they didn't bank the boom. They didn't put anything aside. The fact that they have a $38 billion debt at the end of the biggest boom ever, I mean, at least the feds paid off a lot of their debt and were in surplus, whereas New South Wales didn't pay off any debt and are in deficit going into this crisis.
What's your reading? I'm changing tack here. What's your reading on ABC Learning and the latest on all of that? So who's going to be the biggest loser apart from
themselves? I'm a shareholder and I'm an unsecured note holder, so I've dropped my $100,000. But the biggest loser, obviously, the shareholders have dropped to close to $3 billion. On what they've put in, including the Singapore government, $400 million June last year, gone. That's one of their most embarrassing investments. The banks are owed $1 billion. The Commonwealth Bank's up for the biggest whack there of about $500 million. And I think they're going to take a haircut. They've already written off $100 million. I reckon they'll probably might even lose another 100 or two on top of that, because it's very difficult to sell these 1,000 centres in Australia, particularly because 437 of them are actually owned by another listed vehicle. They're actually owned by the Australian Education Trust, which have long-term leases to lease them to ABC Learning to operate. So the only thing they've got to sell, the main thing they've got to sell, is the licences to operate the centres. If it was bricks and mortar, if you said they've got 1,000 centres, I mean, you drive around the suburbs and they're everywhere. You say, you could sell them off and you could convert them into units, or, the land's worth something. But they don't even own the land. They're operating business. So I think that the government's not going to allow anyone to buy the lot because it's a shocking industry structure with too much concentration. So I think you'll see this worst time ever to sell. No one wants to become Australia's biggest childcare company in this environment. The brand is mud. So I think they have to sell them off centre by centre to not-for-profits and a few...
I was going to ask you that, whether you think that the whole idea of privatising childcare in the first place is actually viable, or it should be in the not-for-profit sector and left there.
Well, given that the government gives them $300 million, ABC Learning $300 million a year in subsidies, effectively it is a majority sort of government-dependent industry. And you can argue, does outsourcing the management of it, does that deliver a better outcome? And the answer in this situation is no. Mm. It's delivered a disastrous outcome, particularly for the investors, and all the dislocation now for the parents. So I think the government hasn't got the money and doesn't want to particularly become a big childcare provider. Julie Gillard in the Parliament today said, we want private operators to express interest
in that. Because they've bailed them out till the end of this year. Basically, it's bailing parents out so that they know where their kids are going.
That's right. So the 400 loss-making centres get funded till December 31. A few of them, I think, will close because they're not viable, and parents will be given a few weeks' notice to say, we can't find a buyer, this is closing, you'll need to go and find an alternative centre here or there. And then you might get not-for-profit stepping in and running it for a year. So the government might subsidise a particular not-for-profit and they might run the centre for the next year and the parents are going to put more in.
But it's a nightmare anyway.
It
it's
is
hard
a real
enough to get
mess.
In
it's a real mess. And the administration will cost a heap because the accountants are all on $400 an hour, and the government's now announced that their own sort of a receiver advisor, PBB, another accounting firm, they're working with the official receiver on the forensics to get all the numbers together on all the centres. So it's a real mess. And one little smoky in the pack is the chairman of ABC Learning, a guy called David Ryan, who suffered the biggest ever protest vote that a top 50 company chairman has faced in Australia. He got 34% when he was re-elected to the Transurban Board 2 weeks ago. He's up at Lendlease tomorrow, one of our biggest property companies, and I reckon he might go down. So I think we might see the argument that you're stuffed up over here, pal, and therefore we're not going to give you another 3 years on $200,000 a year over here, given the absolute mess that is ABC Learning. He's not totally responsible, but he was chairman of the audit committee for the last 3-4 years. He's chairman today.
Responsibility.
I think he'll get taken down tomorrow at Lendlease.
Can you just quickly explain to me too how they were allowed to call it ABC Learning?
I don't know the history, but it's an outrage.
It is an outrage, isn't it?
I mean, it was just the whole thing with Larry Anthony on the board and he was the minister who was handing out all the money and the stockbroking firm, Austock. Well, Eddie Graves had a stake in Austock, and Bill Bessemer, the chairman of the stockbroking firm, was on the board, and Eddie's brother-in-law, Frank Zullo, did all the developments and this licensing and the accounting. The whole thing, starting with the outrage of the name, will be a corporate case study for years on how not to do things. And a lot of people, some people made money out of it. I mean, Michael Kroger made, I don't know, but it was $3 or $4 million because he got into a competing childcare industry, which the company was chaired by Andrew Peacock. So you sort of had these people who were associated with the treasurer of the day, which made the decision to outsource and dramatically increase funding. And they opportunistically got into it and then sold out. I don't think they sold directly to ABC Learning, but they had a listed company and they sold out and they made millions. And I think people will look back at it and just say, I think I'd just rather sort of a more plain vanilla, not-for-profit.
Exactly. As I said, the same names keep cropping up, don't they, as being round lurking in the background. Yeah, it's just been a complete shambles. Stephen Mayne with you and with me, Lindy Burns, this afternoon, 774 ABC Melbourne, the Could Have Beens. Well, two thereof, Geoffrey, Billy, good evening.
Hello, Lindy, good to be here.
Derek Gill this evening. Before you go on, I just want Stephen to quickly explain how he was escorted from the building from Channel 7's AGM yesterday.
Oh, well, not really escorted. I was midway through a... Kerry Stokes, you need to improve your governance. You run this like a private company. You don't even webcast the AGM. I was halfway through one of those. And he just said, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. Sit down. And I said, well, the law says I have a right to comment. He says, no, I've had enough. Sit down. And I held my ground for a couple of seconds. And the next thing I know, this burly security guard was coming at me. He got about halfway there. And I thought, I think I better sit down. So that was it. That was the end of the AGM. Mm.
That was the end of the AGM.
And then so they played. Then
does
they
that
played
cause it. Procedural problems now? Well, will he be in trouble with ASIC?
Well, we have no record of the meeting because he confiscated my recorder when I got there, and then he refused to webcast it. And then he said, his lawyer said, there's no law that requires us to make a record of this meeting available. So I have no evidence that this happened because...
Well, there is evidence of this other thing that's happened. And you, if he's got explaining to do, so have you. I saw you on a television screen earlier today wearing disco gear.
I've had a lot of grief about that.
He was down. On Talking Heads last night.
The wide collar.
ABC
it was fabulous. I've had a lot of grief.
But you must have provided that. Well, or did they dig it up somewhere?
You fly to Adelaide. To Adelaide, so I didn't have my counsel.
Oh, you bought it in Adelaide.
No. I just turned up and then I thought, oh, what are we in or out? And so I didn't. And then Peter Thompson didn't rescue me from my own fashion ignorance.
You looked like you were sitting next to Ron Barassi on the bench in the 75 grand final.
Well,
John
that's
Travolta.
True.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, it's lovely. It was nice to have you on there anyway. It was very good. What are your plans this evening, Bill?
Well, we've been researching for the last hour and a half.
Of course you have. Feverishly.
Looking
for something to talk about.
Well, no, we have that.
After unexpectedly having to go on the radio last night.
We need boffins with accents. So we've been looking for boffins with accents to give authority and weight.
Any boffin.
Well, we don't care as long as they've got an accent.
French
Eastern
accent?
European.
We're looking at the green car. Alternative propulsion for vehicles, cars, whatever that's meant to be built into this very constructive stimulus package for the automotive industry. It's meant to have green cars in there. So we're looking at all the different kinds, hydrogen cars, the ones that you can go to a car shop and buy today, the hybrid ones, electric ones. And, yeah, we've scoured the world, but we're only speaking to scientists who have funny accents.
Fantastic. I love that. And rightly so. Mm. Mary Jane, is it still a nightmare out there?
Yeah, but it is actually. Five cars have been involved in a crash on the Princes Freeway outbound. Just after the Point Cook Road exit and just before the Hoppers Crossing exit, one vehicle is said to be still on the road. Also, another crash has happened on the corner of Gain and Abbotts Road in Dandenong South involving a car and a truck. And that's said to be causing lots of delays. Cars are being diverted from Abbott Street down Frankston Dandenong Road. Eastbound are being diverted up Park Street and southbound are being diverted down National Drive.
Is that it?
And that's it. Oh, just an update on that power failure in Albert Park.
Yes.
The lights are still out on Beaconsfield Parade and Kerford Road, but they're back up on Albert and Clarendon Streets.
Okay, so thank you. It's been a very busy day. Thank you, Stephen.
Thanks, Lindy.
See you in a week's time. And Geoffrey, Billy, see you on the radio.